Your brain needs support, and new Ollie Brainy Chews are a delightful way to take care of your cognitive health. Made with scientifically backed ingredients like Thai ginger, L-theanine, and caffeine, Brainy Chews support healthy brain function and help you find your focus, stay chill, or get energized. Be kind to your mind and get these nootropic chews at Ollie.com. That's OLLY.com. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
At Evernorth Health Services, we believe costs shouldn't get in the way of life-changing care. And we're doing everything in our power to make it possible. Behavioral health solutions that also keep your projections at their best? It's possible. Pharmacy benefits that benefit your bottom line? It's possible. Complex specialty care that cares about your ROI? It's possible. Because we're already doing it. All while saving businesses billions. That's Wonder made possible. Learn more at evernorth.com/wonder.
So excited to be back. Welcome into UAP, the Unidentified Alien Podcast. I am Stephen Diener. Over there is Karen Curtis.
Hello.
And we have, we got some good ones here for you today on other Roswells. So, of course, I'm sure you've heard of 1947, Roswell, New Mexico. You've heard of it, right, Karen?
I have. And, you know, I think people, their eyes glaze over when you talk about UFOs and Roswell and all of that because they've heard it so many times. And it's like, yeah, little green men or whatever, little gray guys. Then they thought it was a weather balloon. But give us a little background on what that is, because we're talking about other ones. And one of them happened in Mexico, and it shares the same desert as where the Roswell incident went down.
That's right. Yeah, they call it Mexico's Roswell. So we're going to hit that here in a little bit. But, of course, the original Roswell. When you hear Roswell, you know, you think about, you know, Area 51, and you think about movies and TV shows and all wild stories. But it all goes back to July 1947, a couple of years after World War II ended. So, of course, you know, a lot of security is still heightened at that point. We're trying to develop new technology and things like that. And there was a crash in the desert of Roswell, New Mexico, and it was reported in the papers that the U.S. Air Force had recovered alien technology. They had recovered a UFO, and then that was later retracted the next day because
we can't say that.
Exactly. The military got to them and say, no, say it was a weather balloon, and, well, the rest is history.
Well, it was at the Roswell Army Airfield that issued a press release, and it said that they had recovered a flying disc.
Right.
From a ranch near Roswell, and the Army then quickly retracted the statement and said, no, the crashed object was a conventional weather balloon.
Of course it was.
You silly goose. And so it didn't resurface till the late 1970s again when ufologists got all over it.
Yeah, and then you have, and we'll get into this another time too, we have people like Bob Lazar who say that, you know, they worked in that area and they saw the aliens and all that good type of stuff. So, you know, we've all seen the videos and the pictures of the alien autopsies and whether or not those are real. But, you know, the thing about it is a lot of people already know a good amount, maybe not the fine details of the Roswell incident, but, you know, it's in the American lexicon. So what we wanted to do was let's look at other Roswells, so to speak, other incidents like Roswell throughout the United States and throughout the world that are just as famous, if not more famous, but they don't get as much coverage and notoriety.
I just want you to differentiate between Area 51 and Roswell.
Yes.
Because actually, the CIA, for the first time, acknowledged the existence of the base June 25th, 2013,
right,
following a FOIA, Freedom of Information request. And Area 51 is the name. It's a highly classified United States Air Force facility.
That's right. In Nevada, about 80 miles or so northwest of Las Vegas, or 83 miles for the exact coordinates. And it's a top secret military base. They developed a lot of technology there over the past 60, 70 years. Things like, you know, the B-2 bomber, the spy planes, U-571.
The Lockheed U-2 aircraft.
Right.
So Roswell is not Area 51?
No. So Area 51 is over in Nevada in the middle of nowhere in the desert. All that different type stuff. So, and then Roswell is in New Mexico. So it's all desert.
Why do I get them mixed up? Because they're always linked together.
I think that's what it is. It's, you know, people think Roswell, they think of Area 51, but they're actually two separate places. It's two different states. So,
Karen,
if we're gonna, no, it's not just you.
No, I thank you for clarifying that.
Yeah, of course.
But there's always been, you know, intense secrecy surrounding the base, so...
Yeah, I mean, they develop all types of technology there, but, you know, there's different reports of people who work at Area 51, you know, top-secret military people that work for, say, Skunk Works out of Lockheed.
Didn't they take the wreckage and the aliens from Roswell to Area 51?
They say, and also they talk about it being taken to a base in Ohio. I forget the name off the top of my head, but it's always been moved around. And, you know, but there's reports of people who work at Area 51. They have to fly in on, you know, private jets on the airstrip, and they're taken through all these back channels and tunnels and things like that.
Huh.
So it's, I'm sorry. Did I say U-571 earlier? That's a submarine movie. I meant the SR-71 spy plane.
There you go.
Probably somebody screaming at me saying, what is this moron talking about, U-571?
All right, you figured it out.
Matthew McConaughey was in that.
He was, right? Yes.
The SR-71, the spy plane. So, yeah, a lot of technology has been developed there. But two different things. And like we said, there's a lot of other stories that are just as intriguing, if not more intriguing, that you're going to hear today about other Roswells.
Yes.
Do you have any factoids, though?
Oh, to start us off?
Yes. I know you always like to have a factoid first.
Oh, no.
Let's just say that entire thing was one big factoid. How about that?
Wait a minute. There's got to be something that I can talk about.
Are you going to pull a factoid out of thin air right now? Is that what's happening?
No, I think you should, you know what, instead of my factoid, you should go ahead and tease next week's show, because it's just such a doozy that I am speechless.
I'm not sure if the people are ready for that yet, so I'm gonna hold on to the tease.
It has to do with Obama on Mars. That's all I'm gonna tell you.
Just wait for that one later on, and especially next week on the other episode that's gonna come up, you know, next time. But if you want to hear any other episodes that you might have missed before we get into the other Roswells here, you can always go to 850wftl.com, where the show lives, and of course, right on there, anywhere you get your podcast, on Apple, on Spotify, or podcast1.com, where you can subscribe and listen to all the other episodes you might have missed and get ready for all future episodes, like next week when we talk about Obama on Mars as a teenager.
Oh, my gosh. What is that?
Get ready for that one. But to start off here, Karen, how about we go to Kecksburg, Pennsylvania, where they had their own Roswell-type incidents.
They did. It was shaped like an acorn.
That's right.
It was a giant alien squirrel dropped his nut.
I guess so. When chasing it.
Yeah. It happened December 9th, which was my mom's birthday.
Oh, wow.
1965, Kecksburg, Pennsylvania. A fireball reported by citizens of 6 U.S. states. And what was weird about it is that they were all from different places and they had the same story.
Correct. And that's the kind of stuff that always intrigues me. Just like when we talked about in the previous episodes about ancient aliens, where you had, you know, the same type of descriptions of, you know, sky people, from people in Egypt to the Incas. I mean, how does that happen? So when you have the same reports of people over Canada, too, they saw this in 1965. And then you have people in Detroit. You have people, you know, in Pennsylvania. And they're talking about the same sighting. And
right.
So you can't have, look, Twitter wasn't around in 1965, okay? So you couldn't exactly go right on and see what somebody was saying. You couldn't text your buddy in Detroit while you're in Kecksburg, Pennsylvania. So you have people in different locations of the country and in other countries in Canada who had no way of communicating with each other other than calling up your buddy on the telephone and saying, hey, are you seeing this?
And you all know what happens with the telephone.
Yeah,
game.
Exactly. So
it changes, but this didn't change.
They all have the same type of description.
And well, but so in 2005, NASA released a statement saying that they examined some fragments found in the area and said they were from a Soviet satellite, or I guess the Sputnik is their capsule. But anyway, the records and their findings were lost in the 1990s. So
right.
But here's some sound from people who actually saw this acorn fireball, which actually what astronomer said was a burning meteor bolide.
Sure.
Burning up in the atmosphere.
Sure.
Here we go.
The wife and I seen the streak in the sky and heard it on the radio. The object fell down over this hillside to my right.
Well, this was the front page of the morning edition of the Tribune Review. We cannot eliminate the possibility that it could be extraterrestrial. So these people, most of them don't even know each other. But what they don't know is so many of these people gave me those little details of what they experienced that night in 1965. And those little details confirm other people's accounts.
We stood up here for hours, at least. I was here at least 2 or 3 hours standing right here. But it was something that went out of control, came down in Kecksburg.
Yeah, the wife and I seen it.
That's right. That's how I start a story usually. So it's
the wife and I seen it.
Yes, Karen, a little inside joke there. Karen always makes fun of me because when I talk about my wife, I start off the story, the wife and I.
He always uses the determiner.
That's right. So we found that funny there. He said the same thing. But it was, look, this is intriguing because, again, you have multiple witnesses in multiple states. This was an interstate sighting. And an inter-country sighting,
yeah.
with Canada involved.
International.
Too. International. Inter-country. What am
That's
I thinking?
That's cool. It's a neologism.
I'm going
with
that.
But what's so interesting is they have a festival, too. And
yes.
We have a picture of it up at our blog on 850 WFTL and go to the UAP blog.
That's right.
But it's quite funny. They recreate this acorn-shaped thing, mm-hmm. and they have like alien costumes on. It's kind of cute. But it's their Roswell.
It is. And actually, it is commonly referred to as the Pennsylvania Roswell. So this was a big thing. It happened, 18 years after the actual Roswell incident in New Mexico. And, you know, when you have multiple people, multiple sightings, interstate sighting, international, not intercountry, international sighting, talking about the same type of glowing acorn-shaped fireball that's coming down and you see it crashing.
At a steep angle.
At a steep angle. And then what happens to the wreckage? Nobody knows. So if it's a meteorite, okay, let's just go with NASA's explanation of some type of Soviet satellite or meteorite, a bolide. Where is the wreckage? Nothing was ever found because basically what they say anyway, as the story goes, is that it was taken by the military and covered up. And then you have these stories about Soviet satellites and bolites from space that, quite frankly, the people who witnessed it don't buy because they know what they saw and they stand by it to this day.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
With Kizik hands-free shoes, motion sounds something like this. Kizik helps you experience the magic of motion. With over 200 patents and easy-on, easy-off technology, you'll never have to touch your shoes again. There are hundreds of styles and colors, plus a squish like nothing you've ever felt. For a limited time, get a free pair of socks with your first order at kizik.com/socks.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Hi, everybody. This is Adriana Trigiani. I'm the host of You Are What You Read. I have the privilege of interviewing luminaries of our times about the books that shaped them from childhood until now. We get everybody from Sarah Jessica Parker to Kristen Hanna, Mitch Albom, Susie Essman, Craig Ferguson, Rainn Wilson, Amor Towles, you name it, they come, they share. New episodes of You Are What You Read drop every Tuesday on Apple, Spotify, or any major streaming platform wherever you listen to your podcasts.
So it just is one of those things that makes you wonder, Karen, what did they see that night in 1965 on the Pennsylvania Roswell incident?
But so if there's nothing left, how did they know it was an acorn shape?
Well, just because of the description they saw.
As it was falling?
Down. Right, exactly. Oh. And they say...
That sounds like a capsule, though. Like
it does.
Yeah.
And some people say that they actually saw the military recovering this thing and driving away with it.
Oh, there you go.
So, look, again, we always tell you, we're not here to tell you what to believe. We give you the story and you make up your own mind. If you think it's BS, by all means. If you think there's something to it, well, we're glad we can entertain you and intrigue your little mind.
I didn't know about it, so that's cool.
It's pretty wild.
So, moving on to Mexico's Roswell, the Chihuahua UFO crash.
That's right.
Woof, woof, woof. This is the one that shares the same desert as the Roswell incident. It's actually along the Rio Grande River near the Texas border town of Presidio.
That's right. Yeah. So this is, you know, it's funny because I kind of pride myself on being up on all these wild stories of UFOs, UAP, the history of this. I didn't even know all the fine details of this one. I always heard about
Weird.
I always heard about it, Mexico's Roswell, but I never actually kind of dove deep into it until recently when we were doing the research for this episode. And I don't know. I think this might be even more interesting than the original Roswell in New Mexico.
It is because, so it was 10 o'clock at night, August 25th, 1974, as I said, along the Rio Grande River near the Texas border, this thunderous explosion in the sky.
Mm-hmm.
It shattered the stillness of the warm summer night.
Oh, it's like a book.
The unidentified flying disc was traveling 2,500 miles an hour. I mean, you don't, even when you're going Mach 3, you're not.
Right.
I mean, and then they said it collided with a small airplane heading south from El Paso, Texas. And here's some sound about that.
I was speaking to some of the local town people. The flight path of the UFO would have been from the south, which is Brownsville, Texas, coming over, swinging over, going northeast. Over that mountain peak there?
The impact site is on the other side of that
mountain. The other side of that mountain.
Well, we've discovered wreckage of a plane that's strewn about out here in the desert. It could be the plane that crashed with the UFO. I can't really know that until we analyze this and find something anomalous on it, maybe some kind of radioactivity or something that would give us a clue that maybe there was some contact with the UFO.
So it's, and another thing about this, Karen, is that it was seen on radar, because we always talk you know, to give more credibility.
Evidence.
Right. You have to have some type of evidence. It's just like a criminal case. What's the evidence?
Exactly.
You can have accusations, but what's the evidence?
It's all circumstantial.
Right.
No, it's not.
In this case, you have, again, eyewitness sightings, but you also have, you know, not only eyewitness sightings to a mid-air collision, but eyewitness sightings from trained you know, air traffic controllers who are seeing this thing on radar making sudden movements, right angles, left angles, crazy, going at crazy speeds that really, in 1974, the only thing that was going at that speed were experimental rockets or, you know, things like that that were getting ready to send into space. You're going to the moon on an Apollo mission. So other than that, what else could be flying at that speed that is going into Mexican airspace?
Nothing.
I mean, it
really, I mean, the flaming wreckage of both the aircraft basically fell into the Mexican desert. And then there were two governments. Obviously, we were, and the Mexicans were trying to recover the technology that may have or may not have crashed there.
Right. No, exactly. And so, of course.
But they're saying that they found the wreckage of the plane. I don't know. From 74?
I'm not sure. You know, some of the stuff on some of these other shows that investigate these things, some of them are kind of hokey. But again, you know, you make up your own mind.
They threw a propeller and some glass and some metal in the desert and go, look what we found. We found wreckage.
It's very possible. You never know. It's, you know, some of these TV shows. But that's not what we do here.
No.
We give you the facts or at least the stories that are out there. And again, you make up your own mind. We just want to let you know what's going on with it. And what I find so intriguing about this one, Karen, is people saw the explosion. Of course, it was reported. I mean,
this
was an FAA incident.
Right, because a plane did go down.
Right. So, of course, the cover story that ends up coming out, even though the U.S. military is rushing to Mexico to go after this wreckage, the cover story that comes out is, well, it was a drug smuggling plane that crashed. Then why is the U.S. military hauling you-know-what to Mexico?
Right.
To try to recover something.
Oh, a drug plane. Got it.
Yeah.
Well, I don't count that out, but what hit it? That's what we want to know.
Right. I mean,
why was it going so fast?
Yes.
How fast does a meteor go? Does it go 2,500 miles an hour?
I mean, I guess it can. I'm not exactly sure, but what I do know is that meteors don't change angles like that suddenly. Right angles, left angles, all these different things. And being picked up on radar like
that's
that.
That's right. It's, yeah.
So you had something that was making those movements.
It was maneuvering.
Yes. That on radar, we know as a fact. That it was something making those movements, something going that fast, and something that crashed into this small plane in midair. It did happen. The question is, what was it? What made that happen? And that's always been the question for this Mexico's Roswell. And people have been trying to investigate it and figure this thing out for a long time, since 1974.
Yeah. It's a while.
And actually, I mean, this was such a big story, such a unsolved mystery, you know, something that people have talked about for years. It was actually a book, and it was called Mexico's Roswell, the Chihuahua UFO Crash. So it's, you know, again, doing the research, you come across these things. It's on Amazon. I don't know the guys. I mean, if you want to look into the book and buy it, go ahead. Yeah. I don't care. It's not like this is an endorsement or anything, but it's just such an interesting story. It's compelling.
It is compelling.
You know, and again, with Roswell, it's always more sexy because it was the big first, you know, mass sighting. It was in the newspapers, reports of alien bodies strewn across the desert.
That was back when the news, you know, reported the news.
Well.
And now it's like, whoa, doesn't fit the narrative. We got to change that.
Yeah, you're not sure sometimes.
But they reported it and then they retracted it. So right. That's interesting because someone went, wait a minute.
Right.
No, no, no.
And that timeline too, just to kind of go back to that real quick of 1947, the original Roswell incident. That goes back, if you listen to the previous episodes, when we talked about the Majestic 12 a few episodes ago, being formed around the 1947 area-ish, of, at the same time around Roswell, because once that happened, they realized, well, how do we get out in front of these things next time around?
Yeah, and, so we don't tip our hand and report exactly what happened.
And the Majestic 12, some of their, or most of their responsibility was come up with cover stories, investigate in secret and come up with cover stories and basically lie to people on what is really happening.
What they think the public can't handle it?
I don't know if it's that they can't handle it. And that's really been one of my questions for a long time, Karen, is why doesn't the government disclose more? Now, we know we started this podcast because of the government disclosure towards UFOs and the, you know, the congressional report that came out basically stating that, yes, UFOs are real. We don't know what they are. There's ours.
We have 150 of them that we can definitely say are unidentified, some kind of flying object, and therefore it lends validity to the fact that there could be alien life.
Right. And you even had the director of NASA, Bill Nelson, coming out recently saying that, yeah, you know, we don't know what some of these things are, and we have to have the discussion of if it's not an adversary, then is it alien life? And, you know, his comment was, who am I to say that aliens aren't real, that they don't exist? You know,
he's an astronaut, he should know.
Right. You know, and this is a comment from the director of NASA. Like you said, he was an astronaut, Bill Nelson. He was a senator, too,
I believe.
Right, for Florida. So it's, you know, it's there's more and more disclosures, more and more acknowledgement, at least. But there's never been that full disclosure from the U.S. government. So the question is, why? Is it because they don't trust the American people with the information?
I think so. They think we're going to freak out.
I think also another big reason, personally, before we get to our final story here, which is before we get to this final story, let me just tell you, as a teaser, I think this is my favorite story, aside from the Dulce base, early on here in our podcasting journey. This is one of my favorite stories ever that's about to come up.
Well, I can't believe you dug it up.
Aha, I see what you did there. You'll understand that pun. But I think one of the other reasons why the government doesn't fully disclose the truth about UFOs, aliens, you know, UAPs, unidentified aerial phenomenon, not our abbreviation of unidentified alien podcast, is because they use this stuff for the military. They reverse engineer a lot of this technology that gives us Kevlar, that gives us laser technology, that gives us night vision goggles and, you know, fiber optics. So military
and Teflon frying pans.
Yes. Look at that. Practical use for alien technology as well. And of course, you know, use for spy planes and things like that to disappear off of radar. And
right.
So there's so many uses for alien technology that we've reverse engineered that we know about as civilians. I can't imagine what's kept under wraps at Area 51.
Yeah, I think they keep spoon feeding us with stuff. They're like, these humans are so dumb.
I think that's really what it is.
They need to speed it up here.
Yeah, no, right.
They are like, we're like the Flintstones to the aliens.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. So I think that's what it is mainly, is they don't want to let on to all the things that they've been able to reverse engineer because of national security, so to speak. They don't want to have China or Russia come on and be like, oh, let us get that too. We didn't know you had that. So if there's full disclosure, then that means other countries are going to find out and
say, shouldn't we be sharing this with all humans? I mean,
well, if we go back to our Valiant Thor episode.
Yeah, said so.
Yeah, exactly. And that didn't go too well. So
yeah.
Again, if you want to hear any of the other episodes we've ever done, 850WFTL.com or anywhere you get your podcasts. And also on the 850WFTL.com is our UAP blog, where you can see all the pictures that pertain to what we spoke about in this episode and all the previous episodes as well.
Amen.
Including...
Oh my gosh. Yes, we buried the lead.
Yeah, exactly. And that's exactly what this story is. We talked about the Roswell version of Pennsylvania, Roswell version of Mexico, and now Texas has their own Roswell incident, and this predates the original Roswell of New Mexico.
Really?
By 50 years, Karen.
Oh, my goodness. We're like pre-1900s.
Exactly. We go back to 1897 here in Aurora, Texas.
Wow. I'll try to explain this one because that's way back when. Actually, this area, the Aurora Cemetery, may contain the most important grave in the world.
Mm-hmm.
It may contain aliens.
That's right.
From a pilot from a spaceship that crashed April 17th, 1897. Here's a little bit of the audio from a guy that knows the cemetery well.
And this is my understanding, that he was moved and buried elsewhere so that, you know, people couldn't go around digging him up. And it would make sense to agree. The people that did that are all dead. I don't know if they passed it on to anybody else, but I'm not aware of anybody that knows actually the actual burial site. But, you know, again, you know, that going back to that good old Texas law, you got to get permission of his next of kin to dig him up anyway, so who knows? Unless you're the people that's going to move him.
Yeah, so like an exhumation, you'd have to like phone some sort of other planet and find out if it's okay.
And what you're, right, yeah, exactly.
E.T. phone home.
Right, are you the parent of this alien? And so what he's referring to there is in 1897, there was this crash, okay? Now, keep in mind, I don't want to gloss over 1897 because that's important here, the timeline. The Wright brothers didn't invent flight until 1903.
Okay.
Okay, this is 6 years before the invention of flight. So 1897, you're sitting in your ranch there in Aurora, Texas, and you see something flying in the air. You're like, what the heck is that?
And the pilot of the spaceship is the guy they buried.
Yes.
We didn't have pilots back. Did we even have the word pilot?
No, I don't think we did. So again, the timeline here is...
Here lies the guy that was in the thing.
Yeah. I mean, they didn't even know what to refer to this as because there had never been anything flying before.
That's right.
That they had ever seen. Now, so keep that in mind because it's extremely important. It's not like now when you have a sighting and you can say, oh, well, it was a drone. There was nothing. It's 1897.
Yes, right.
So they see this thing flying through the air. It's crashing to Earth. This is reported by multiple witnesses at the time. It was even in the newspaper. It's one of the first reported sightings on print, actually.
It hit a windmill.
And so they have a memorial to all this in Aurora, Texas. And so, of course, the townspeople, they go to check it out, and they tell the kids to stay behind. One of the kids is Mary Evans, who was 15 at the time. Karen, when I tell you...
You scoured.
Everywhere.
Yeah, so she was 15 in 1897, so there could be audio of her speaking about it somewhere.
There was a 1972 interview, and I've seen the interview before.
Okay.
And for the life of me, okay, I could not find this interview for this episode. I wanted to play the audio for everyone so they could hear the interview themselves. But unfortunately, it's been like scrubbed from existence. So I can just tell you firsthand from that interview, she spoke about matter-of-factly that her parents told her to stay behind at the barn. They were going to go check out the scene. And they told her what they saw. They had no reason to lie. Again, there's nothing to gain from
this. They discovered the alien body. They forbade her to go.
Yes. They you know, they said, look, you stay here and finish your chores, so we'll tell you what's going on.
Yeah.
And they did. And they told her, look, we found an alien body. We found a body that wasn't human. There was wreckage. And they buried it. They got the pastor. They had a Christian burial for this otherworldly being.
Really? Interesting.
And they gave him Christian final rites, and they took the wreckage and put it into the grave with the alien.
Oh, that's cool, because they're saying that the craft hit the windmill. It was torn to pieces along with the occupant, whoever this person was, or thing. And then they were blocked by the scientists wanted to dig it up.
Right.
By the Cemetery Association, because, like the sound said, the exhumations could only be authorized by next of kin.
Exactly. So you might be wondering, well, if there's an alien buried there with a gravestone, by the way, that marks it. There is a gravestone
That's
there.
That's what they said.
Still, to this day, that people go to visit, that says, here lies, you know, space traveler who crashed in 1897 along with his wreckage. And, you know, unknown.
But he's not there.
But he's not there because...
They moved him.
Well, here's the thing. Like you said, you needed, by Texas state law, you needed permission from next of kin to dig it up, so nobody could ever do it. They wanted
to. It wouldn't apply. That jurisdiction doesn't apply to space.
To space, right. So, of course, there were always fights over this. Well, eventually, Karen, you had MUFON, who we've spoken about before.
Yeah, MUFON.org.
Right. It's the Mutual UFO, not MUFON. That's MUFON.org.
Oh.
MUFON is the Mutual UFO Network, and they have different divisions around the country. And they tried to investigate this site some years ago, and when they went to go investigate it, they did some metal detector work, and they actually found spikes of detection of metal at the gravesite. So again, how did they dig it up? Well, they were trying to get special permission. By the time they got back to go try to dig this gravesite up, guess what? No more spikes.
Of course not.
Metal detectors.
When you say spikes, you mean the metal detector
right.
was pegging.
Exactly.
Not metal spikes in the ground. But
yes.
they need to relax this exhumation law there.
I know.
I mean, come on. And then there was this Charlie Stevens. He was 10.
Right.
When it happened, and he explained that he saw the airship trailing smoke as it headed north toward Aurora, and he wanted to see what happened, but his dad says, no, finish your chores.
Hey, priorities.
I think that's what our kids need today, some chores.
Yes.
But he said that his father went down the next day and saw the wreckage from the crash.
That's right. So again, these are witnesses who have nothing to gain. There was no... There wasn't a Roswell. Okay?
They weren't getting clicks by claiming this.
Yes, exactly. These are just regular old people who are living their lives pre-20th century.
They didn't go viral.
No. So they saw something crashing to the ground. Again, 6 years before flight was even invented. And this is their story. This is what they say that they saw. So you have to wonder to yourself, out of all the stories we've ever spoken about, whether it was Valiant Thor, the Dulce base, underwater bases, whatever we've talked about in the past, Eisenhower meeting with the aliens, Nixon taking Jackie Gleason to meet aliens at Homestead Air Force Base, which again, these are all in previous episodes if you want to look at our previous episodes and listen. Out of everything we've ever spoken about, this one story, to me, has to be one of the most compelling, for lack of a better term, damning stories of evidence toward the existence of something otherworldly. Because you have these people from 1897 who have nothing to gain, who have nothing to lose by reporting this. It's reported in the local newspaper. And what else can they say? They see something flying through the air before flight even existed on Earth. So they have no other way to explain it other than what they saw, which is an airship trailing smoke, wreckage, a body on the ground.
A flying saucer of some sort.
Right.
You know, that I don't think that was mainstream back in the 1800s that aliens were in flying saucers. But, you know, it makes me think of the dinosaurs and their extinction and what caused it. They're saying, what was it, a big meteor or asteroid? Maybe it was a spaceship.
The only other explanation is that it was some type of meteor. Meteorite, whatever. That's the only other explanation. But they called it an airship.
Yeah.
I mean, I think they would know the difference of a rock and some type of flying instrument, right? I mean, I know it's 100 years ago, but it's not like they were dumb.
And then MUFON comes back and the metal detector doesn't pick up anything. That's weird.
Right. So that's the thing about this, too. They had a burial. It's not, like they're going to throw meteor fragments into
right.
a grave.
It
and
was like
do a
some
Christian...
sort of a being.
Yeah. I mean, they had a body. And it was dead. So they did the only thing they knew how to do, which was have a respectful Christian burial. They did that for this being. They put the wreckage in there. Years later, it's investigated by MUFON. They see the pegging on their metal detectors that there's something under there. They come back to investigate, and it's gone. And so the question is, where did all this stuff go? Because the gravesite is still there to this day. But now there may not be anything in there because it started to gain more notoriety. It started to be investigated. People, there was a lot of different specials, TV specials and movies being made about this in the 70s and the 80s. So as that started to happen, well, that catches the attention of not only the populace, but of the government.
Well, I think it's weird that we talk about all of this and all these sightings, but we have no tangible evidence of an alien. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
We don't have a corpse. We don't have really photographic evidence.
You know, unless you want to believe, again,
except
stories like
radar.
This. Yeah. You know, stories like this where people say they had the body and they buried it. Or Roswell, where people, you know, different people have said that they've seen bodies. Jackie Gleason, who said that, you know, Richard Nixon showed him alien bodies.
I like the sweaty, hairless one with the three arms. Did he have three arms?
I think it was three fingers.
Anyway, that was the one in Brazil.
That was Brazil's Roswell.
There's a lot of sightings, but we never actually have a physical either body or photo.
That they let us see anyway.
Right. I mean, there's kids that have drawn stuff.
Right.
and it all looks the same.
Yeah, no, it's a good point. You know, again, previous episodes, anywhere you get your podcast, you can find UAP or on 850WFTL.com. We talked about the happening in, I forget the name of the city, but in Brazil, where those girls.
Those three women, yeah.
They saw what they described as some type of alien, you know, sitting.
Crash landed. He was dazed and confused.
Yeah,
after
he was injured.
Yeah, he was injured.
And they have, you know, descriptions of that. And another incredible story that we've talked about in the past, and I think it was our mass sightings episode, where you had the school children in Africa.
Right.
I believe it was Zimbabwe.
Yeah, and they drew pictures of it.
They all drew identical pictures of the alien that landed in the back of the school. I mean, it was an incredibly big ship. They drew pictures of the aliens that they saw. So, again, these are all eyewitness accounts. We've just never had that one moment yet, where an alien has come on TV and said, hey, I'm an alien.
I want to take a selfie with an alien.
That would be something.
How fun would that be? I mean, now we've got this proliferation of cell phones with cameras. We should start seeing more photographic evidence if they're this pervasive.
I mean, look, there's always reported sightings. I mean,
unless they jam it electronically or give an EMP.
Well, that's the thing that makes it tough, too. I mean, you can go to YouTube and type in UFO sightings and a million videos pop up. But what's real and what's photoshopped and what's digitally made by somebody in their, you know, in their bedroom? We don't know now. You know?
I don't want to know.
Right. So it's hard to tell. And that's why I find these stories that we cover on UAP so fascinating and compelling, because
there's no motive to come up with this.
Right. These are things that are verified by radar. These are things that are verified by seasoned pilots, by eyewitness accounts.
Newspaper reporting.
Right. In times like in Aurora, Texas, anyway, in times before flight even existed, you know, before the turn of the 20th century. So we tried to give those types of stories to you. And again, you could always go on YouTube and just look up videos, but you don't know what's real. You don't know what you're looking at.
Exactly. There's so many things that we don't know whether or not it's true or real or not. It's a crazy time we're living in.
Well, speaking of crazy times, Karen.
Yes, next week.
Now is a good time to preview next week, episode 19 of UAP, the Unidentified Alien Podcast, where we are going to venture in to the crazy astronomical world of purported time travelers.
Oh, I love it.
And I know we've talked about portals and stargates before.
And lost time.
Yes, but these are time travelers and interstellar portals, where a man named, well, I don't want to give away the name yet, but a man who talked about being part of a 1980s experiment with teenagers with a guy named Barack Obama.
On Mars.
Where they were sent to Mars together. And even another guy who talks about how he was recruited right out of his bedroom as a teenager and spent 20 years on the moon, on bases and on Mars, fighting interstellar wars. I'm telling you, these stories are ridiculous, but they're amazing.
Love it.
You make up your own mind when you hear them.
You make up your mind, exactly.
It's incredible.
I love it. That's interesting because, you know, what is the purpose of the moon? The Earth and we, the people on it, would not survive without the moon and the tides and all of that. But also, is it like a Death Star?
Well, according to some people, there's a lot more on the moon than
cheese.
Maybe not cheese, but there's a lot more on the moon than just craters, according to some people. So
interesting.
We're going to get into some of those stories next week on UAP, the Unidentified Alien Podcast. Remember to download and subscribe to this and any other future episodes. You can rate us with 5 extraterrestrial stars.
Please.
And find us on 850WFTL.com on the UAP blog, and of course, wherever you find your podcasts. For Karen Curtis over there,
hello.
I'm Stephen Diener. Have a good one. We'll talk to you next time.
Thanks, Stephen.